Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. Now, here's your host, CJ.
Hi, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Today on Fired Up with CJ, I have Missy April, who is the owner of a family farm in Cape May County, New Jersey, and who is also a sustainable farmer. So today is learning all about sustainable farming. What is it? How could we use that, and how does it apply to our daily life? So welcome, Missy.
Thanks for having me, CJ.
I am so excited about this show because there's so much that I realized I didn't know as I was writing and preparing for the show. It seems like, you know, all the choices that we have to make as consumers are getting more and more complicated. So I'm really thrilled for you to help us kind of figure it all out and educate us. So thank you.
Well, I'm happy to do that, and I agree with you that it is definitely a confusing time for consumers.
Yeah, so I wanted to start off because you have a really beautiful story about how you started your farm, and it's that kind of wonderful story that you see almost in the movies where some elders had passed down their knowledge and wisdom to you about farming in this case. So I just wanted to find out a little bit about the kind of traditions that they handed down to you. I know that you have a colonial farm, not even sure what that means. So tell us a little bit about when your love of farming and gardening began. Was it at an early age? When did it start?
Well, I actually grew up living the suburban life. My parents were really the first generation in my family that pretty much had left the farm. My father was a teacher, so we lived the typical suburban life that lots of people live nowadays. So I wasn't really exposed to growing vegetables or having gardens. We just had our little suburban yard. But my grandparents' generation were from the farm, and a lot of my older relatives, you know, still gardened or farmed, and my grandmother used to take me to visit people like my Uncle Ellie, and I just remember as a small child, we would go to see Uncle Ellie's house, and his gardens were so beautiful. His tomato plants were like Jack and the Beanstalk to me. They were at least twice as tall as I was. I was always fascinated by how this food was growing and how you could just walk out into your yard and pick your own food. And to me, that was very magical.
Yeah, it is as a kid, too, because it's you're like, wait, is that same thing that I see in the grocery aisle, that tomato? Like, wow, I didn't realize it was a vine and that it's such a big plant. You know, it's all those kind of things that the connection between the thing in the grocery store and then seeing it real life. I think there is something really magical about it too.
There is, and we have visitors to our colonial farm, and we get a lot of families and a lot of children, and some of these children and even some of the parents have never really been to a farm before, and I see that same sense of wonder and excitement in those children that I felt as a child.
Are there certain things that any stories that you remember vividly where you're like, wow, that was incredible?
Well, the tomato story to me that was really my fondest memory was just seeing these tomato plants, and it seemed like a forest of them, and they towered over me, and my Uncle Ellie picking a tomato off and just handing it to me, and I'm from Jersey, so I love tomatoes. Jersey tomatoes are the best in the world. And I just remember taking a bite of that tomato like it was an apple, and it was just magic to me.
Yeah, and they taste so much. I have to say, of all the different vegetables, tomato is the one that is the most discernible, the difference. We're like, is this thing that same thing that I bought? I mean, it tastes completely different. It is like
absolutely
an apple, isn't it? It's so sweet and juicy. Oh, I miss Jersey. So tell me a little bit about the Well, I mean, tell me a little bit about the traditions, because I know that you had mentioned that they were handed down. How were they handed down to you, these traditions in gardening and farming?
This is pretty interesting, CJ, because there was a wealth of knowledge in my grandparents' generation, but unfortunately, by the time I was old enough to, you know, start having my own garden or start to want those things, my Uncle Ellie's generation, they were mostly gone. And so I really lost a great opportunity to have mentors within my own family. Years after my grandfather had passed away, I was going through some of his things, and I found a certificate that was from his high school years that certified his competency in farming. And it was really a bittersweet moment for me to find that diploma and to look at it. And I really felt that I had come full circle, pretty much across two generations by returning to farming. And I really wish that my grandfather was here to see what I'm doing now. But because I did lose the opportunity to have that kind of mentoring when I was younger, I was extremely fortunate to find a mentor when I married my husband, Greg. Greg's father had been farming for years, and he was from my grandfather's generation. He's in his 80s, and he became my mentor. So he was my source of knowledge. He's taught me so many things, and I really would not be successful doing what I do without the knowledge that he has passed on to me. So that was invaluable to me. Although I lost a mentor in my own family, because by the time I got old enough to take advantage of their knowledge, they weren't with me anymore, I was extremely fortunate to find a new mentor in my father-in-law. When I married my husband, Greg, his father, who is of the generation of my grandparents, he's in his 80s now, and he has been an incredible mentor to me and a source of knowledge that is invaluable. Without his help, I would not be successful as a farmer.
So how did that work, though? Did he just, I mean, tell us a little bit about how that process worked. Did he just come out to the farm and meet with you every day, or tell us, what would a training session be like with your father-in-law?
Well, prior to meeting my father-in-law and, you know, marrying my husband, I had kind of struck out on my own and gardened by myself very unsuccessfully, because I was going into it blind. And anyone who has done that in their own yard, they know what I'm talking about. It's really hard to succeed if you don't know what you're doing. So I had kind of learned some things, but I was definitely a fledgling gardener. And I was lucky enough to marry into a family that had a farming background, and they actually operated a replica colonial farm, which is basically a small-scale colonial farm where they grow crops and have animals, and they farm the way it was farmed in colonial times. So all of a sudden, this whole new perspective opened up to me. When I was just farming in my backyard, I was, you know, using chemicals and fertilizer and pesticides. And so when I got to the colonial farm, I saw there was a whole different way to do things.
Hmm. How did they do it in old colonial times?
Well, for one thing, there were a mix of animals and plants on the colonial farm, and they worked together, which is how nature intends it. So our chickens produce chicken manure, and we use that to fertilize the garden instead of going down to the big box store and buying a bag of chemicals. And it's really a beautiful system, because in turn the chickens eat some of the food that we produce on the farm. So it's just a big circle that never ends.
Oh, interesting. So it's all about, and that's what the idea of a sustainable farm is, I assume, is that it is a circle where there's nothing wasted. Is that right? I mean, I'm trying to figure out I don't even know what sustainable farming is, frankly.
That really does sum up the essence of it. It's more of a natural system that is based on the practices of nature, as opposed to a factory system, which is what most of our food is being produced by, what we like to call factory farms. You may have heard that term. And in the factory farming model, it's just seen as, you know, you put things in at one end of the factory and out at the other end pops your product. So if you put enough fertilizer and enough pesticide in, then at the other end you'll get, you know, your tomato or whatever.
Right. So it's kind of like more of a recipe where it's like, put this, you know, it's like you measure one cup of this, another cup of this, and then like you get the output, put in the oven, done.
That's one way to describe it. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Versus where you're, it's like, so does, how does that work though in practice? Well, actually, you know what? I've just noticed that we're out of time. So I want to find out when we get back how that works in practice. We have Missy April, the owner of an award-winning flower garden and a replica colonial farm, called Learnings Run Gardens that's located in Cape May County, New Jersey, on Fired Up with CJ on Transformation Talk Radio. Up next, learning more about sustainable farming. What is it? How does it work? And how? Why is it important to buy sustainable products at the grocery store? If you want to know more about Missy or listen to other shows like this, check it out at www.firedupwithcj.com. We'll be right back.
TransformationTalkRadio.com. TransformationTalkRadio.com. Transforming the world one listener at a time.
Hi, I'm Paul Bland. Did you know there is only one truly perfect food protein produced by nature? It can bring dramatic results to your health, your appearance, and overall performance. Introducing Action Whey. No other protein supplement on the market has been able to achieve the incredible health benefits of Action Whey while still achieving a taste that is better than a malt shop shake. Action Whey, for the way nature intended. Visit seaandearth.com. That's seaandearth.com for more information.
Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Lower back pain can be a real pain in the, well, you know. The newly patented Vacupractor relieves that pain simply, inexpensively, and from the privacy of your own home for just $59.95. Listen to what Brad and Dottie have to say about their Vacupractor.
The Vacupractor is amazing. I've had back pain for so long, it's taking time to adjust and not having the pain there.
Each time I've used my Vacupractor, I've gotten instant relief. I would recommend anyone with stiffness and lower back pain give the Vacupractor a try.
Vacupractor is just a one-time cost of $59.95. And you can use it whenever you need in your own home. How does it work? Simple. The Vacupractor uses vacuum pressure. It stretches muscles, restoring proper nerve function and reducing the possibility of disc failure. Finally, a simple, effective treatment for lower back pain that really works.
For more information about the Vacupractor or to order yours, call 800-676-9320 or visit vacupractor.com.
In case you just joined in, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Missy, who uses sustainable farming practices on her replica colonial farm called Leaning Runs Gardens. Is that right? I'm sorry I mispronounced it before. It's Leanings Run Garden. Is that right?
That's right, CJ.
Oh, so sorry.
That's okay. We get that all the time.
All right. This segment, I wanted to talk a little bit more about sustainable gardening. And then also, we actually had, I don't know if you're familiar with Dennis Hayes. He's a father of Earth Day, who we had on in the beginning of the month. And one of the interesting things he said is that people care deeply about the environment, But yet they've kind of lost faith in our government and traditional policies to make a difference. And so they're looking for ways to individually make a difference, and, you know, where they have more control over their situation. And I think about going to the grocery store as being one of those things, right? You actually are completely at control whether you buy something or not, and that those decisions really do make a difference on protecting the environment. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that. First, I want to start talking to you about the sustainable farm, but then also help our listeners understand what sustainable farming is and then why it's important when you go to the grocery store. So you at the tail end of last segment, you were just talking about sustainable farming, but and you were talking about how that works on your farm and how it contrasts to factory farms. How does it work with other farms, you know, in terms of sustainable farm? What does that term encompass and what does it mean?
Well, sustainable farms, they do operate less like a factory and more like a natural system. The goal is to follow principles that don't deplete our natural resources, that don't create pollution. Really, sustainable farming is about growing food that's healthy for people and healthy for our planet. And that's the most basic definition that I would use for sustainable farming.
Okay, so there's lots of different ways to farm that meet. Are there lots of different ways to farm that don't deplete our natural resources, don't create pollution? And what does that mean in practice?
Well, in practice, that means it means a lot of things. I'll try to keep it simple. Probably of paramount importance is to build up your healthy soil. For a farmer, soil is more than just anchor for the roots of the plant. Soil is what nourishes the plant. And if you're using a lot of chemical fertilizer, you're not really nourishing your soil. And that leads to lots of problems in terms of pests and diseases, and also in terms of health for humans. So that's really the number one practice. And so avoiding a lot of chemical inputs, things like pesticides, things like chemical fertilizers, which create lots of problems. Relying on more manures from animals, and also what we call green cover crops and green manures, which are different kinds of plants that we can grow in our fields that will build up our soil. On my farm, I use buckwheat, I use winter rye, and the way that works is that in the fall, my husband and I plant rye seed, winter rye, and it grows. And so all winter long, if you looked at our farm, you'd see it would sort of look like a big grassy field with tall grass, and that's the rye. In the spring, we till that rye right back into the soil, and it adds all that nutrition back into the soil. So, you know, that's one practice that sustainable farmers use. There are many other ways.
So the chemicals existed, though, so that they could actually get rid of pests and diseases. So they were trying to solve one problem, which seems to just, like, be the things that are attacking the plant. Is that right? I mean, why did the chemicals exist to begin with? What problem were they trying to solve?
Well, there's always a battle in nature. Just as much as I want to eat that tomato, so do the tomato hornworms. And, you know, as much as I want to eat the cabbage, so does the cabbage looper. So there's always been a battle for who's going to eat the food. And sustainable farming doesn't mean you avoid that battle. It means you approach it differently. The problem that I find with, and a lot of farmers find with, pesticide use, a lot of pesticides, they don't just kill what we call the bad bugs. There are lots of good bugs, too. And sometimes when you take that scorched earth approach with pesticides, you're killing all the beneficial organisms, things like honeybees, things like earthworms. We need those things. It is a natural system. It's not a factory. And so by eliminating all of the beneficial flora and fauna, you're really causing more problems. Then you start to see the results of that in, you know, imbalances. And nature needs to be balanced. So that's something that's very important.
So it's really that scorched earth approach that does not, because it's killing everything, including the earthworms that help nourish the soil. That's the problem with that particular approach, is that it is kind of a, like, everything else dies, including good things. Is that why the soil is less nourished? Is that right?
That is a big problem, yes. That is correct.
Okay.
And in addition, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm going to assume that you feel the same way I do. I would rather eat a tomato that's not covered with things that are poisonous.
Right.
If bugs can't live on my tomato, I probably don't want to eat it either.
But that's a really, you know what, I never thought of it that way, but I think that's a really good way of thinking about it. So how do, what other things aside from, is it primarily just this not use of pesticides? Because you said pesticides, and then you also said there was another thing, other chemicals that they use. I mean, what else does a factory farm use aside from pests? What other chemicals and things do they use that we should know about as consumers?
Well, I think if you're looking at the damage to the environment, which is a very serious issue, and we're all concerned about that, I agree with what you were speaking to about consumers being very, very mindful of that and very concerned about that, but not knowing, you know, how to make a better choice for the environment. Mm-hmm. One of the issues is fertilizer. When you're talking about factory farming, they use huge amounts of chemical fertilizer. And what happens is all of that fertilizer is applied to the fields, and there's excess. So what you have is something we call runoff. You may have heard that term. And a lot of times that runoff, which is both fertilizer, excess pesticides, all kinds of, it's sort of a chemical soup. And that runoff winds up contaminating waterways. It winds up contaminating communities. It's really a big issue for the health of our communities and our planet.
Okay, so that's why I know that one of
the farming avoids a lot of the problem with runoff.
Right. So the healthy community is not only like eating healthier food; it's also because of the runoff is actually affecting the water quality and what you're drinking and all the systems, because everything is, as you said, connected.
Absolutely.
Interesting. I just didn't realize a lot of these things. So how do you? I mean, because you're moving to this kind of farming, and you know you can't rely on the chemicals, and you know you probably can only produce a certain amount of manure, right? Do you? Is it more costly to farm this way?
Well, that can really be very variable. There are a lot of factors, but one thing I'll point out in terms of the manures and the way that all works. On a small family farm, traditionally, animals and plants lived in harmony, you know, and the animals would produce the manures, and you produced enough manure to run your farm, and it was really a beautiful system. But what has happened with the way we farm now, it's become such large operations. You have farms that are producing thousands and thousands and thousands of acres of one particular crop, and there's no room for animals in this system. The animals have all been taken to the feedlot, and that's where we raise our animals that we're going to eat. So a feedlot, the manure that was once such a valuable asset to a small farming system becomes a huge problem in a feedlot operation, because you have thousands and thousands and thousands of animals producing lots of manure, and what do you do with it?
Right. So in some ways, yeah, isn't that fascinating? Yeah, and you need it, yet you can't get it. I mean,
yeah,
like
we had such a beautiful source for fertilizing our farms when we coexisted the animals and the plants together. Once we separated them, we had problems where now we need a lot of chemicals to fertilize because we lost the manure, and we have these great big operations producing all this manure that makes communities, if you have ever been to a community that is near a feedlot, it's a miserable place to try to live. And there's also problems with disease, contamination. We created quite a problem when we split the animals and the plants up.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting that there are these unexpected problems. My original question was, is it more costly? Like, should we expect as consumers, as we go to, shop in this particular way, that sustainable farms and the products will be more expensive because there's a little bit more involved? Or not really? I don't know.
That is a very interesting question, and it opens up areas that you may not have considered. If you go and expect to pay what I call a premium price for sustainable products, what you're really paying is a fair price, but we don't recognize it as such, because when you buy factory farmed food, there are all kinds of hidden costs that you're paying that you probably never thought about. And some of them, such as pollution, health problems, all of those things. That's part of the price. But farm subsidies are another hidden cost. As taxpayers, we pay enormous subsidies to support production of commodity crops. Those are those farms I mentioned to you where they have thousands and thousands of acres of corn or soybean or cattle feedlots where they're producing beef. Those types of operations receive the bulk of farm subsidies, and that keeps the price for many food products artificially low. So you really are paying more for that cheap factory farm food than you realize you're paying.
Right. It's just not that it's not going to be on the price tag. I mean, you're paying through your taxes, you're paying through other kind of ways, and you're paying environmentally too, but they're not anything that you actually see when you actually look at the price itself.
Absolutely. When you buy sustainable food, you're paying a fair price for a quality product. It's like the saying, you get what you pay for.
Right.
So it may be a higher price compared price tag to price tag against factory farmed food, but there's a little more to it that you have to think about.
Yeah, interesting. And so you mentioned that it's a healthy for – oops. All right, so it looks like that it's our cue to wrap it up. So more for Missy when we get back.
TransformationTalkRadio.com. TransformationTalkRadio.com. Transforming the world one listener at a time.
Hi, I'm Paul Bland. Did you know there is only one truly perfect food protein produced by nature? It can bring dramatic results to your health, your appearance, and overall performance. Introducing Action Whey. No other protein supplement on the market has been able to achieve the incredible health benefits of Action Whey while still achieving a taste that is better than a malt shop shake. Action Whey, for the way nature intended. Visit seaandearth.com. That's seaandearth.com for more information.
Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Lower back pain can be a real pain in the, well, you know. The newly patented Vacupractor relieves that pain simply, inexpensively, and from the privacy of your own home for just $59.95. Listen to what Brad and Dottie have to say about their Vacupractors.
The Vacupractor is amazing. I've had back pain for so long, it's taking time to adjust and not having the pain there.
Each time I've used my Vacupractor, I've gotten instant relief. I would recommend anyone with stiffness and lower back pain give the Vacupractor a try.
Vacupractor is just a one-time cost of $59.95. And you can use it whenever you need in your own home. How does it work? Simple. The Vacupractor uses vacuum pressure. It stretches muscles, restoring proper nerve function and reducing the possibility of disc failure. Finally, a simple, effective treatment for lower back pain that really works.
For more information about the Vacupractor or to order yours, call 800-676-9320 or visit vacupractor.com.
I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This segment on Fired Up with CJ, Missy April, who is the past president of South Jersey Shore Chapter of Slow Food USA, Well, everything is a tongue twister today. This segment, what changes we can make in our eating habits that can help protect the planet. Folks, I would love to hear from the audience. So if you guys have a question for Missy about making more conscious choices at the grocery store, love to hear on your thoughts about shopping this way. Contact us at 1-800-930-2819. We'd love to hear from you. When you call, please make sure to leave your name, location, and the question with Chris. And we'd love to have you on air, too. So welcome back, Missy.
Thank you, CJ.
Yeah, I thought our previous segment where we were talking about the pricing, I never thought about it that way. But you're right. There are a whole bunch of hidden costs in that. The idea of fair pricing for quality product is a new one for me. So thanks. That shifted my perspective on pricing. I know that the same thing with when we were talking in preparing for the show, we were talking about organic and cruelty-free. And again, you again enlightened me to what, you know, that those labels mean a different thing potentially from a farmer's perspective versus a consumer perspective. Because, you know, now as a consumer, I'm looking at those labels all the time. What do you believe are misleading about those labels, or what can you tell us about those labels and what they mean?
Well, CJ, in a perfect world, labels would be about giving you more information so you could make better choices. But in reality, they're usually about marketing.
Right.
There are ways to get you to buy a product. And it really is a difficult time to be a food consumer. There are so many choices. There are so many options. When you walk into a modern supermarket, there is such a vast array of things you have to choose from, and it can be overwhelming. And there really are so many labels that most people don't know what they mean. Cruelty-free is a good example. It's not clearly defined by law, so it can mean whatever the manufacturer wants it to mean, which kind of makes it meaningless as far as I'm concerned. Another label that can...
What should it ideally mean? Like if you were to think about ideally what it should be, what do you think it means ideally, and what do you think it means maybe in practice when you're at the farm? And you're like, really? That's cruelty-free? That's pretty cruel to me. Like what does cruelty-free mean, do you think? What should it mean?
In my perfect world, cruelty-free would mean, when you're talking about animal products, generally that's what cruelty-free is used to describe, or cosmetics, meaning not tested on animals generally. Mm-hmm. But in my perfect world, what cruelty-free would mean is that the animal was allowed to live a natural life and allowed to express its way of living in a way that is as close to the way nature would have intended it as possible. And that is really hard to define. That's really hard to write down exactly what rules that would involve. But that would be my perfect world version of it. So that certainly would not involve another label you've probably seen is free range. I'm sure you've seen that one.
Yep, absolutely.
And free range sounds wonderful. It makes me think of happy little chickens running around in the grass and the sunshine. But really what the USDA requires, if you're going to call your product free range, all that means is that the poultry has been allowed access to the outside.
Oh, my goodness.
That's all that is required. What that can mean is that you can take thousands and thousands of chickens and put them inside a building that's bigger than a football field. As long as you have one little door that leads to a, you know, could be a 10 by 10 little outdoor area, you can call your product free range. Very few of those free-range chickens ever see the light of day. Most of them live their entire lives pretty much indoors in crowded, and when I say crowded, it's hard to imagine exactly how crowded that is. So when you buy things that say free-range, you may not really know what that means. I know I didn't until I learned more about it.
Yeah, and so how did you discover, because I assume that you went on to one of these big free-range, you know, quote-unquote free-range chicken places, and then like, really, that's it? Like a little door that some poor chicken may be able, or some lucky chicken who's like, hey, man, this is cool. I wish I was. And they lead a little chicken revolt where all of them then exit the door. I mean, what were they expecting? I mean, did you visit a farm? Is that how you found out about what was really happening? Or how did you know about
them? I have seen them. And, you know, I decided to educate myself. I wondered what that meant. I mean, I know what it would mean to me, but I wanted to find out what does it really mean, because, again, it comes back to marketing. There are so many products on the shelves right now, and they need to get you to buy their product. And as consumers start to care more deeply about these issues, they have to find more ways to appeal to that. And so you really have to not let them fool you. You have to educate yourself so that you can make those better choices.
How about organic? Is that something, I think you'd mentioned that as well, where it's like, well, that's even a term. And I thought that was more regulated, but maybe not. Well, what does organic really mean?
Organic, that's the label that people are probably the most familiar with. And the standards for organic labeling, they are pretty high. There's a certification process that producers have to go through. The standards are clearly defined. So organic, of all the labeling that's out there, to me, organic is the most meaningful. That is the one that I would, I guess, trust the most in the supermarket.
Right. So that's probably the only one you're like, you know, this is uniformly understood, unlike the free range where it's like, you know, that seems like there's lots of different variances on what's actually happening in the background, even though you assume that it's like happy, free chicken running in chicken land. Or happy cow or whatever it is.
I have to say, though, CJ, that the distinction of being the most trusted label, in my opinion, that's pretty much faint praise because, in my opinion, labels are not tremendously helpful when making decisions. Organic is probably the best of the bunch, but that's not saying a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, here's the difficult thing from a consumer perspective, and I would love to hear listeners' perspectives. I mean, how do you think this is going to affect your choices at the grocery store? Want to hear it? So give us a call at 800-930-2819. You know, I've recently been more savvy to reading labels, and I literally just sit there. I mean, Greek yogurt, finding Greek yogurt is like a painful experience. So I sit there and I look at all the labels and figure out how much fat and how much sugar, and then I look at the actual ingredients list. I mean, it takes forever for me. I mean, literally it's probably 5 minutes for me to choose a Greek yogurt to buy. So, I mean, this is yet another thing, you know, and it's not even information that I can find out readily, right? How does one go about doing shopping this way?
Well, I think, it does require a little more time investment, a little more effort, but my number one piece of advice would be consider stepping outside of the supermarket for some of your food choices. Trying to find locally produced food is one of the most important steps you can take and probably one of the most rewarding steps you can take as well. So when you decide you want to take this step and look for local producers, where do you start? That's where Slow Food comes in. Slow Food is a wonderful organization. It is a volunteer organization, and it's filled with people just like you, just like me, who care about food and are interested in these issues and interested in making better choices. There are over 200 local chapters of Slow Food, so there's probably one in just about every community. Mm-hmm. And they've done a lot of the legwork for you already because they've already sourced a lot of these local products. And by visiting their website or getting involved with the group, they can be a starting point to show you where these local producers are, whether they're farmers, whether they're artisan cheese makers, whether they're bakers, whether they're producers of pastured beef products. There's a wealth of food outside of the supermarket walls that's better for your health and better for the planet.
Yeah, so it's almost like when you're looking at, you know, if you're looking, you're going through even Whole Foods, you can say, oh, I know this manufacturer, Slow Food recommends this particular manufacturer, and therefore I'll actually buy this particular bread or this particular, you know, I know that cruelty-free truly is cruelty-free, so I'll actually go buy this brand. Is that right? So they tell you brands and then farmer markets are both types of information.
Well, Slow Food more will point you towards local producers. So not as much with the brands and the labeling. Although some chapters may have resources, every chapter is different. They all have their own sort of unique flavor. So some may have those resources, some may not. So they're a good starting place, but you still have a lot of choices ahead of you. And unfortunately, there's not one single easy cure, but there are little steps you can take to move towards the right direction.
Great. And on that, and the next segment, we're going to talk a little bit more about the kind of easy steps that people can take. I also want to hear back from listeners. Contact us at 800-930-2819. Are you going to add this to your shopping criteria, looking at sustainable food and how food is actually farmed? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. Farmer and slow food advocate Missy April discussing next, what steps that we can take on Fired Up with CJ on Transformation Talk Radio. If you want to know more about Missy or listen to other shows like this, check it out at www.firedupwithcj.com. We'll be right back.
Ladies, are you living an inspired life? Do you yearn for a more passionate, dream-filled life? Here's Linda Joy, founder of Aspire Magazine, and she has a gift for you.
Aspire has launched its Mission to Inspire initiative with a commitment to give away 100,000 one-year digital subscriptions to women around the globe. Every subscription comes with a multitude of free gifts from our team inspiration partners.
To claim it all, go to aspiremag.net today. No purchase necessary, and live an inspired life.
Get ready to feel more alive. Alive with a Deal brings you the truth behind things you experience every day, ways you can heal yourself, and choices that make you feel truly alive. A Deal is a true Renaissance man, a world-renowned yoga master, naturopathic doctor for 10 years, an attorney, and has degrees in physics, math, hypnotherapy, massage, operatic singing, plus he's an expert in green home building. Alive with a Deal discusses health for your body, from heartache to heartburn, your mind, from judgment to joy, your home, from cooking to color, and your spirit, so you can bring forth your talents hidden deep within. A Deal bravely discusses things most people wouldn't touch, delivered with compassion, integrity, and wit. Alive with a Deal is about your own healing so that you feel more alive. Tune in each Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on Transformation Talk Radio and Alternative Talk. Feel more alive. Alive with a Deal.
Hi, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This segment on Fired Up with CJ, Missy April, who is a past president of South Jersey Shore chapter of A Food USA. On our final segment, I wanted to kind of wrap everything up. But before we do that, I want to hear from you, listeners. Tell us, call us, 800-930-2819. How do you think your food decisions will be impacted by this show? Are you going to do anything differently, or is this all too complicated and just give you a headache? Tell us. Tell us what you think. So, Missy, I wanted to go back and loop back to our previous segment on being a smarter shopper at the store. What other considerations should we be looking at when we're shopping?
Well, one important step you can take that is a little easier and less daunting is to try to be more conscious of what's in season where you live. If you walk into your supermarket in January and you see some beautiful strawberries, it's a no-brainer that those didn't come from anywhere local to you. If there's snow on the ground and strawberries on the shelf, they're not local food.
Yes, exactly.
And really, you're doing yourself a favor by eating seasonally and locally because the food is so much more flavorful. When I pick strawberries from my garden, they're a world apart from those winter strawberries that look really nice but don't taste as good as they look. So I think getting used to eating with the rhythms of the season where you live is a step that's a little easier to take.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's actually you know, if you go, I live near a Whole Foods, so they're always telling you where the food is from. And you know what, I mean, and I don't know whether this is just a Whole Foods thing, but I think you could probably even ask the person at the produce department, where is this food from? If you're not sure, you know, maybe you're clueless like I am for gardening, right? And you may like, I think strawberries it can be grown here. Or like on the West Coast, where you're just like, well, maybe in parts of California they can. I mean, you just don't know. I mean, what are the questions that you would ask? So go ahead.
You should definitely ask questions. Wherever you're purchasing your food, you should be very feel very free to ask questions. And if you don't get answers, you should start looking for another place to buy your food where they can answer your questions.
Yeah.
I know that here in New Jersey, where I live, there's a wonderful program here that our Department of Agriculture does. It is a marketing program, but it's a valuable one, and it's the Jersey Fresh campaign. And what that does, products that are grown in New Jersey, vegetables, things like that, if they're grown in New Jersey and they're being sold in the market, they will be labeled as Jersey Fresh. And that's a real easy way for consumers in my state anyway to identify, oh, this came fairly locally. New Jersey's a pretty small state, so if it's Jersey Fresh, it didn't travel more than maybe 3 hours to get to you. And so that's another thing that you can look for. If it's grown near you, it's probably going to be fresher and healthier.
Okay, so I have to share with you, I have to share my guilty sinful. I will confess my sin. I did buy some blueberries from Chile, from Whole Foods, and my children said, Mom, they taste awful. Don't buy these again. Why do they taste awful? Why do they taste so bad?
They taste that way because they're not bred to taste good. They are bred to have a long shelf. No, it's true. It's really true. The taste is not the quality that they're being bred for. They're being bred for their appearance because that's what gets you to buy them. They look nice. They're huge. They're blue.
They did look nice. They look beautiful.
Sure they
yeah.
do. And they're also bred to have a long shelf life because if those berries are grown across the country from you, they have to be picked, put in a truck. Well, first they go to a packaging facility, but they wind up in a truck, and then they take a nice cross-country trip to get to you. So generally speaking, the most flavorful fruits and vegetables are also very perishable because they have high sugar contents. They're more perishable. So what they're looking for when they're picking varieties to grow on a big scale and sell far away are ones that are going to ship well, and that doesn't mean taste good.
Well, I can attest to that because I have to confess two cents. So I got blueberries and strawberries, both from, different parts of the country. One was like from New Zealand. I don't know. But they really did taste awful. They looked beautiful, but they tasted awful. So that is a true testament to what you're saying. And they're probably less healthy, right? Not only because they're just bred in a certain way, they're bred to be marketed, and look good versus actually being healthy.
They're certainly less fresh. And to me, freshness has a lot to do with the quality of the food. So it's difficult to quantify healthiness when you're talking about food, but definitely fresher food to me is something I'm interested in.
Okay, so when you look back at the show, what are the couple things that you really want listeners to take away from listening to the show?
Well, don't be fooled by marketers. Don't be fooled by labels like free range. Find out what it means. Don't be completely swayed by what they're trying to sell you. That's my first piece of advice, and that's sometimes difficult to do. So seek out like-minded folks who are also trying to navigate the supermarket. Slow Food is a wonderful organization that's just filled with people who have a wealth of information and are also seeking information. So you can learn together. Get involved with your Slow Food chapter or at least visit their website to use their resources. Strength in numbers, and by joining together with a larger group of consumers who have these issues on their mind, you'll be more successful.
Right.
And then the last item really is learn what grows around you and what time of year it grows, and that way you'll be getting the freshest food. Seek out local produce when it's in season. I know here in Jersey, we wait for tomato season like it's a religion. Jersey tomatoes are a real hot commodity. And after you've had a Jersey tomato, you'll never eat one of those winter tomatoes that shipped in from who knows where again.
I completely agree. I am from New Jersey, as I mentioned earlier. So that and corn. I mean, I don't know why New Jersey is good for those two things, but they're amazing. So in the last minute, what are some baby steps aside from going to Slow Food? So it's slowfoods.org. Is that right? Slow Foods. I actually wrote down the website. I can't find it. It's slowfoods.usa.org. Is that right?
That's right. Yep.
Okay. And your website is, tell us again, the URL for your website.
Sure. We are at www.leamingsrun.com, and it's L-E-A-M-I-N-G-S. That's a colonial name. The man who used to farm this property back in the 16 and 1700s was named Thomas Leaming, so that's where the name comes from.
Excellent. So go visit, and people can come and take tours of your farm, right?
Absolutely. We're open during the season between May and October every day, and I'd love to meet anyone who wants to come out and see how we do things here on our farm.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I learned a ton. I feel like there's almost more information than I know what to do with. So I think I have to go walk over to the Slow Foods chapter and find out more. I need someone to spread the joy in terms of doing all the hard work at figuring out how to shop consciously. So thank you so much for educating us about how to make smarter decisions at the grocery store. And to folks out there, remember, it takes just one spark, one idea, one action to ignite a fire and move into action. Thanks to Chris at WBLQ. Next Thursday, we'll be interviewing Chris Bevan, who has started a nationwide trend towards being conscious of the waste we produce. He basically gathered all the things that he used in, I think, a given year and carried it around. So we'll hear from him. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thank you, Missy. Great show.
Thank you, CJ.
You've been listening to Fire It Up with CJ. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for more of Fire It Up with CJ. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.